podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Good evening and welcome along to another live episode of Red Tinted Glasses. And Callum is coming. He's just got so overwhelmed by the excitement of Neil Warnock's appointment to the Dons that his computer is restarting. So once again, ably stepping in and to assist through the episode to keep the Mairniacs happy, as he's dubbed all his fans. Phil Mair is back along on the show. Phil, how's it going?
I'm doing good. I'm feeling very much like the Ronnie Jepson to Callum's Neil Warnock right now. I'm ready, able to step up as number two as always.
Well, I'm glad you're with me. And I think a lot of fans are going to be with Neil Warnock after the press conference that came out today, or the one if you've watched it on Red TV or YouTube as well. We spoke about it on the last show, and I know a few people maybe disagreed with our opinion in particular about it, you know, being a bit of a circus, a bit entertaining, and whether or not the club needed it. But now that Neil Warnock has been appointed as manager until the end of the season, and having listened to what he's had to say for himself today, Phil, what is your reaction? Has your opinion changed that this is going to be box office?
Oh, I mean, it's not changed in the terms that it's going to be box office. I will say, as the days gone on, I've just got more and more excited, to be honest. Like, as much as I was maybe mentioning Warnock a bit tongue-in-cheek on the last episode, thinking, you know, it'd be a good laugh and whatnot, the more I've actually heard him speak about his plans, just in general, just hearing him speak rubbish, it's just made me excited. Like, it's just gonna, I just have a good feeling. I don't know why I've got such a good feeling.
I think this is what we needed, in the sense that, you know, we needed a manager to bring back that kind of feel-good factor. And I think, you know, I echo your sentiment there about having that kind of enthusiasm back about the club and feeling good about it, and listening to some of the sound bites that have come out today. And I know it's quite easy to come away with the talk that the fans will want to lap up, but I don't really feel that anything he's saying is just being put out there to appease some of the nature of the fans, because, you know, he addresses the fact that, you know, not all the fans are you know, fully behind the appointment. He knows fine well that there are some fans against the appointment, but that doesn't faze him.
No, not at all. And I think that's the refreshing thing, because I think for all intents and purposes, for me, I believe what he's saying. You know, I don't feel like he's trying to just spoon feed us stuff that will get us on side. You know, the talk of wanting to win a cup, you know, the talk of having no pressure on him because why is he going to be sacked within 4 months? You know, it's stuff that just makes it so easy to just sort of throw all your energy into being with him.
Yeah, and he is now with us. Callum has joined late to the party after some technical issues, and it wasn't just Callum that was having technical issues. As Mark Robertson points out as well, the fact that the Red TV crashed this morning or this afternoon, depending where you are in the world, due to the volume of people visiting the site. Warnock is a needle mover. Callum, obviously, welcome back to the podcast. It's been a while. What is your thoughts on the appointment? And were you one of the people that was involved in crashing Red TV earlier?
I was. In fact, I think maybe I got logged out using your thing when you tried to sign in to watch it as well. I think because I was about halfway through the interview and got booted out because it said it signed in on another device. So sorry about that. But I am happy, I think, in general about it all. It'll be a roller coaster. It'll be interesting to see how it's going to work out. I do have some doubts, but I'm excited nonetheless. I think we'll have fun, if nothing else, which is not something we've been able to say really so far this season all that much. So at least there's that.
No, and Callum, I think one thing, you know, I think it's absolutely right. There are going to be doubts that people rightly have. And I know you could hear us when you were in the background there speaking about the kind of 50-50 kind of way that the fans have gone. But as we were discussing last night, for the likes of me and you and anybody else that does a podcast or creates content in Scottish football, he's going to provide us endless amounts of content, as I've already proved when in our group chat earlier.
Oh God! Oh, I hope you're not planning on playing that one. It'll be a whirlwind experience. Don't do it now, whatever you do. He will provide a lot of talking points. I imagine you get that feeling. There's been a few. It's been out on Sky Sports, and then we've had our press conference, and then the little interview also on Red TV. He's a man with a lot of stories, it seems, and a lot of tangents. And I think once he gets into the actual football as well, I can only expect it's going to get, it's going to go up a level or two when he's got a few things to complain about, which I'm very much looking forward to. He's not going to take any shite, you wouldn't think. And it's about time we had a bit of that.
And I suppose, like, we'll obviously get into the football starting tomorrow, and I'm sure that's when we'll have a bit more of a serious discussion on how he affects things on the pitch. But as Noel Blaha alludes to, Phil, it is a bit of a circus to be sure, but there is substance to him and the results he's achieved in the past. And I think people have to look at the kind of job he's done. You just need to look back at last season, the job that he did at Huddersfield, turning them round. So yes, he will have a circus in terms of the media. I think you hear Chris Harvey say in the press conference he's not seen the media room that busy for a managerial appointment in so long. But you could look at it in another way, that the amount of coverage we've seen from Aberdeen today on, as Calm says, Sky Sport News, BBC News, we're not hearing about our opponents ahead of tomorrow's night's game. The club are going to have a whole spotlight on them between now and the end of the season. Now, whether you want to view that in a positive or negative manner, for any potential manager, they're going to see a lot more of Aberdeen than they would have had we gone down the Peter Leaven route.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the thing with Warnock, I mean, I think we spoke about it earlier before coming on. If you take...
Oh, and once again, here he goes. Wi-Fi, David Cormack's raging at him again.
He's done it again. I'm blaming Cormack. But if you take away the fact it's the character of Warnock, and you look at, what, 8 promotions, over 2,000 games managed, if you're just looking at that, you're going, oh, that's a great pickup for Aberdeen. And you add in the fact it's Warnock, and I think at times it'll work to our advantage. I think, you know, often at times the players have probably felt a lot of the weight of the fans on their back, a lot of the weight of the sort of media sort of scrutiny as well over performances. And I think Warnock's someone that can just take that off, whether it's with his antics or whether it's with, you know, as he said in his presser, if the players are willing to die for him, he'll back them right to the hill. And I think that's only something that can really, really help project us up.
And Callum, as Sam Gordon points out as well, interesting that Warnock mentioned that Burrows was pursuing him at Motherwell. Obviously, he mentioned about the time when he had the opportunity to join Aberdeen and never heard back. I think the press mentioned that was back in the end of the Steve Patterson era. We all know what it was like for the club around that time. As well, actually, maybe a bit before your time to really understand how shite we were back then, Callum. But, you know, he's kind of had this flirtation with Scottish football, I think it's fair to say, and he's been desperate to come and manage here. But, you know, listening to him today, it doesn't feel like a joke to him. And, you know, whether you believe what he's saying or not, he really comes across as committed to doing well for this club. And the other thing that I liked about the way he talked was he acknowledges the fans and, you know, about this being a one club city.
Well, no, don't say that too loudly. Phil'll be annoyed about getting ignored there. But you know, he's pissed off Hearts. Maybe he'll piss off the 12 Cove Rangers fans whilst he's at it with that comment. But no, he does. He seems to talk very passionately. To be honest, in the various sort of bits of media he's done since, well, in between jobs, really, you get that he is just so passionate about football and he absolutely loves it. And you also, the fact he's 75 and he's not packing it in yet, I suppose, tells you that too. But it really did come across in his bits of media today, and it's exciting. It feels like we've got something to be exciting about. He wants players to die for him. If he can get them to run through brick walls for him, I mean, who knows where we might end up? I don't know. I'm not saying we're going to, go and win the Scottish Cup, but it's possible. And if it gives us something that we can get behind and buy into, rather than this apathy that we've had around about this sort of time for the past like three seasons or so, however it's worked out.
And that's the thing, you know, we speak about the kind of the wider picture that the club is now going to kind of come under. We've spoken about the media tension, but Phil, from maybe a negative that people are viewing this appointment as, will be the cost behind appointing Warnock. And I'm sure his assistant manager, Ronnie Jepson, is not going to come cheap either. It's a fundamental and fully understandable concern amongst fans when you look at the route that we've gone down, and you can understand why fans are looking at this with a, should we have maybe been putting money elsewhere, looking, you know, to the next appointment?
Yeah, I suppose in a way, I mean, I guess he alluded to it a little bit in his presser when he was saying, you know, he could have had whatever it was he used, was it triple or whatever, the wage down south instead of taking Aberdeen. So, I mean, clearly, like you said, he's not here for the money. So really, only Warnock and Cormack know how much he's actually being paid. You know, he could be doing a Johnny Hayes and deferring it all, God knows. But at the same time, what did we spend in January? Like, really, we've not invested in the squad. We might as well invest in something that's going to try and dig us out the hole. So I get the cost argument, but at the same time, I just think it's a bit, sort of, you can ignore it a little bit just now.
And I think, you know, the investment in the squad allows an excellent link to this point from Kaiser 1903, where he says, results is I'm worried about. And Callum, you know, we can sit here and laud the press conference, laud the sound bites, and, you know, being on the hype train that everything Warnock's gonna bring. But ultimately, success is judged on the pitch. And that starts tomorrow night at Ibrox. Again, I said we'll come on to our discussions and thoughts around that game a little bit later on. But he has to start getting results on the pitch. And again, he highlights the squad and the fact that he wasn't able to add anything in January. And I think, interesting to note, he knows there's already some weaknesses in this squad.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how much he will have actually seen of us so far this season. But I can't, then again, can't imagine you'd have to watch very much of us to see some of our weaknesses. But that is encouraging, certainly to see. And I don't know. I know we'll still talk about the Rangers game in a little bit, but I can't imagine tomorrow night will have much bearing on his sort of tenure, because he's so quick in the door kind of thing. But he's got all of that experience, and he's banged on in pretty much every bit of media he's done since joining about 90% of being a manager is about man management. And if he can get these players all pulling in the right direction, then you'd like to think the results will start to come, because we know they've got quality. We know guys that haven't been firing, like perhaps Chinney at times, and although Chinney, to be fair, was good against Celtic in the second half, certainly I thought. Duke has been completely off the boil. Players like that, if you can get all of them pulling in the right direction when we know they've got that talent, then it could be a recipe for success.
Yeah. Adil Tarap 2.0 coming in with Duke.
Exactly.
Starting on Tuesday. Stephen McPhee Music pointing out, you know what's weird? We're barely talking about Warnock's tactics and style. It's because we know we're capable if the players are being utilised correctly. Also includes hashtag recall Vinny after his man of the match performance at the weekend for MN. But Phil, you know, that is a fair point, because Saturday was a prime example of kind of showing what this squad was capable, as Callum alludes to, the performance, especially in the second half against Celtic. And again, maybe that is a concern for some other fans around Neil Warnock, in terms of his style of football, maybe more suited to making his own teams hard to break down. But we need to be hard to break down. We saw Barry kind of do that this time last season, and we were grinding out 1-0s, 2-0s. Really, we know we've got players there. We've just not got the best out of them. And if Neil Warnock can't get the best out of this squad, then who the fuck can?
Well, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, I think everyone said it, you know, for the whole season. Everyone knows the squad's there and that we've got the players. It's just we've not set them up right at all. And like you say, Saturday was an example of that. That was, since Barry's interim spell, probably the most organised we've looked. in terms of keeping our shape, keeping our structure, and sort of having a clear sort of style about our play. And I mean, you know, Warnock's done it thousands of times over numerous years. You know, it's kind of a bit daft to question whether he's going to be able to do it now. I mean, he's arguably done it with teams worse than us. So I don't really think that should come into question. And I mean, I thought it was interesting as well as presser how you mentioned, you know, guys haven't really been getting a game, might come back into the fold, which again, like Stephen said, you know, Bissouin would have been a prime example if he was still here. But you know, there is plenty of guys that have been sitting in the wings that could easily have been difference makers in numerous games, and for one reason or another have just been totally ostracized throughout the team. So I think it will be really interesting whether the team will be that different tomorrow. I don't know. You know, he's only been in the door for less than a day. So whether it will still basically be how it was set up on Saturday. But, you know, during the next couple of weeks, I think it'll be interesting to see who's playing, who's not playing, and really how we're going about things.
Yeah, and I think it's quite telling that the fact he said, you know, he could have easily come in to play, take his first game against Bonnyrigg, but the lure of tomorrow's game is what enticed him. But of course, if things go wrong, it's Peter Leaven's fault. And if we win, he definitely had an involvement. Just to kind of circle back a little bit to the point about the financial cost, potentially around the appointment of Neil Warnock, Callum. Risey making this point, and a few others have also commented, but just kind of I want to pick up on Risey's comment because of some of the follow-up comments he had as well, saying fans shouldn't be worried about the money. We wanted an experienced manager. Club are doing it the right way. Wider review, we've got an experienced manager. Works for him and us. Would you agree with that? We're going to kind of come on and talk about the wider review that the club are looking at in a second, but a lot of fans wanted experience. Neil Warnock ticks that experience. You know, he's got eight promotions with seven different clubs. A win tomorrow would see him get his 800th career win. He's not exactly just beating around the bush for the first time. He's been there and done it and got plenty of stories if you know how to look in the right place.
Well, I mean, to be honest, I'm hoping after this 4 months we'll be able to get him on here. That'll be a right laugh. But what a time it would be to get his 800th career win tomorrow at Ibrox. But I do agree with Risey, the fans shouldn't worry about money. And we've basically, how many times has it been said here, elsewhere, managers shouldn't be doing their apprenticeship at Aberdeen like sort of Barry Robson was. And instead, we've gone to the total opposite end of the spectrum and got as much experience as we possibly can. So we can't really be anything but happy, to be honest.
Yeah, and look, Phil, I'm going to come to you because I know you were embroiled in a bit of a spat with Tom English yesterday on social media. Well, there goes any hope of us working for the BBC, but let's be honest, Tom English doesn't exactly help himself with his comment about you know, the fact that Neil Warnock voted for Brexit. But, you know, he wasn't even in the door and he was winding up the usual, you know, suspects in the West Coast media, the fact, you know, Tom English, Ewan Murray, and then Kenny Miller, you know, coming out this morning and saying, what does he know about Scottish football? I bet he's barely watched it. Well, I wonder how much, you know, Australian football Kenny Miller had watched before he went over and managed in Australia. How much Scottish football did Philippe Clement watch before he took the job at Rangers? How much Scottish football did Ange watch before he took the Celtic job? I didn't see any of those comments coming out. But, you know, little old Aberdeen, once we start piping up, they start getting scared. Siege mentality before he was even in the door. Again, just further making me more excited about the appointment.
Yeah, no, like I say, I mean, like that unifying sort of element, you know, I've never seen the fan base more unified than their collective hatred against the West Coast media in the past 24 hours, and it's been beautiful. But it's the same thing as anything when it comes to, you know, your typical sort of Glasgow journalism, whether it's transfers before cup finals or, you know, speculating this, that, and the next things of managers leaving and coming or what may. I just think it's great that he's came in, he's riled them up, he's got everybody behind him in that sense. And yeah, I also just don't get what Tom English thought. He's a 75-year-old man from Sheffield. Who is more likely to vote for Brexit than Neil Warnock? come on, do a little bit of journalistic nous, Damon.
Yeah, Neil Warnock's Brexit Reds are here to cause trouble starting tomorrow.
Even better with the whole, what was it, Hearts and some boy from Latvia. 100% yeah. Tom English was a meltdown at his desk at that.
Although, as my Heart-supporting mate did point out, the guy that they did appoint went on to win them a trophy. So I'm sure they weren't too disappointed themselves. But Callum, Jeff Moran points out about the new data guy. We alluded to it on this show, much to AFC chat's bemusement about us maybe finding out things with a bit of inside knowledge. Looks to have replaced the Spanish siblings. So, you know, the club actually still haven't announced that those two have left or that this guy's kind of taken over. But I think he's used to be at West Ham in Croatia, I saw online today. But, you know, whether that's part of this whole new changes. But if he's got experience of working with Neil Warnock, again, that, you know, keeping something for Neil to, like the continuity of working with familiar faces, that can only help us as well.
Yeah, I think so. I was very confused when you sent me that photo of them together. I just thought, who the hell is this guy? And my acknowledgement does extend to also what I saw on social media that I used to work with Croatia and West Ham. Don't know a thing about him. But then again, I don't suppose you do know much about data analysts. It's just kind of a good thing, I suppose, that we've actually got some in the door, given the departure of the Rams siblings. Because, you know, they're a little bit concerned. I remember seeing a tweet on social media talking about, you know, there should be criticism for all sorts of department. And I thought, I don't even think there is data analysts, but at least there's one in the door now. So there's that. Let's just hope Warnock uses him more than perhaps the previous manager potentially did, maybe.
Yeah, maybe. I'm not alluding to anything. But, you know, Phil, with the announcement that kind of seemed to kind of go a bit under the radar, because I think it came out pre-match on Saturday that the club are, you know, doing a full review, detailed review of the football operation, looking at the coaching, the data analysis, as we've just touched on, the recruitment or lack of, if we look at January, including medical teams. But this isn't just, you know, dedicated to the first team. It goes all the way down through the club academy as well. Is this a really roundabout way of maybe making a few more decisions at board level? You know, we spoke about it on the last show about Stephen Gunn's future at the club. This is a really expensive way of firing the likes of Stephen Gunn.
Absolutely, and I bloody hope it is. I think it's one of those things. I don't think the famed football monitoring board would have taken a hit to their ego of only looking at themselves. I think pitching it as a whole club-wide restructure kind of softens that blow to them ever so slightly. And I think it's probably needed. I mean, like Colin says, I've got no idea about half the sort of goings-on behind the scenes at the club. So it will be quite interesting to see what changes do occur and if those changes actually do make some sort of difference. I'm just hoping it's, you know, there is a heavy focus on aspects that have an on-pitch effect as opposed to just solely looking at the business aspects of the club. I'm hoping it's not just a business audit at the end of the day.
Yeah, you know, one thing we were hoping to do was we were hoping to have Burrows on the podcast a couple of weeks back, but things kind of went a bit tits up on the pitch, and we were kind of interested to kind of hear what would have, you know, he was in Dubai at the time of the Helsinki game for the golf day and doing a bit of business development. So it'd have been interesting to kind of hear how things are progressing off the pitch as well. And Callum, you know, in terms of this kind of review, not looking at just personnel as well, interesting they've kind of given themselves a deadline of April to complete it, including looking to aim to confirm the new management team by the end of the season. Warnock was asked about it in his press conference about whether he would be getting involved. He said it's not up for him to get involved. It's whether or not the club want to ask for his involvement. I think Huddersfield carried out a similar kind of process and didn't get Neil Warnock involved, and they've just recently sacked Darren Moore. So do you think the club will involve Neil Warnock in this process, because there has been a few talks about whether or not we could see Warnock move into a director of football role. Is that just people putting two and two together early doors and getting five?
Possibly. I don't know if Sharon will be happy about the move up from Cornwall to Aberdeen, however. I think since he's here, with the wealth of experience he has, perhaps there will be things he notices that aren't quite right at sort of a footballing level in terms of getting the best results. It would be silly not to ask, okay, maybe don't take it as gospel or whatever, but as a sort of second, third, fourth opinion, whilst he's here, he's managed to whatever have 4,000 games in football, it'd be rude not to ask him, wouldn't it? I think would be as well. And personally, I would love for him to go upstairs afterwards just to keep him around for a little bit longer for more sound bites and the like. I'd love to hear him phoning into BBC Sports and giving him what for instead of Dave. That would be beautiful, I think. But I'm certainly encouraged by the fact that they plan to have something set before the end of the season in terms of a new manager. I think that's perfect, because then, you know, if they've still got a few games before the end of the season, then perhaps if they're not attached to the club, or they could sense an associate or something to pick up some sort of information, and the fact they can then come in the door right away and get to work, and we're not wasting a couple, a few weeks, maybe even a month in the off season, and hopefully they will get ahead of things. And then I think, you know, providing all turns out well with Warnock in charge, then it could look like a masterstroke if it all pans out.
Yeah, JP pointing out that Ronnie Jepson was assistant to Neil Cooper down south, so I'm sure Tati's told him a few stories about what it's like up in Aberdeen. And Ewan Grant pointing out that almost feel like we've got Warnock partly in to entertain and distract at the front of house whilst there's a bloodbath and drama behind the scenes. Not cynical at all there, Ewan, are you? But who knows? It remains to be seen what this review kind of uncovers. I think they've got some American consultants in, so I'm sure Dave selected them well. And I think they've got experience of doing this sort of thing at bigger clubs. And interesting to see the club are benchmarking this review against similar teams in Europe to ourselves, but those teams are currently outperforming us. Although if they're basing that on the pitch, it's not very hard to see how many teams could be outperforming us. But no, Callum, I do agree with that point. I think it would be naive of us not to certainly ask Neil Warnock for input or advice. And if that appointment is made before the end of the season, he could have discussions with said new management team as well. And I'm also really interested to kind of see how Phil, you know, how Neil Warnock gets the best out of some of these players. We mentioned, you know, the likes of Duke and, you know, the Adil Tarap comparison. But I wonder if one of the players he was mentioning was Connor Barron when he made the point about players that haven't had a lot of time so far this season.
I'm sure hoping it is. Like I say, I mean, when he's played this season, he's been, you know, typically one of the standouts on the pitch. I think, you know, against Celtic, I think we were all of the same opinion that he just has to get a contract signed and we have to try and keep him in because he was superb. And I think that's the sort of player, you know, Warnock's wanting. Someone that's going to put himself about a little bit. He's got the creativity and the natural talent to change your game as well. You know, maybe not to rat levels, but you know, he can, you know, get his foot on the ball, drive us forward, but at the same time, he's very solid and puts himself about.
Yeah, no, exactly. And I'm really interested to see kind of what he gets out of this current squad. And Callum, as Sam Gordon points out, Pap Gavey Dundee, could this be the redemption arc that Pap Habib Gaye gets working from someone like Neil Warnock? Because I think, you know, there's obviously been discussions about the likes of Pap and how often he's out in Aberdeen on a night out. You know, Neil's not going to stand for some of these kind of lazy attitudes that I've been accused of a lot of the players recently.
No, I can't imagine he will do. You mentioned sort of Neil Cooper there. It might be sort of similar to Alex Ferguson, you know, turning up and what's that you're drinking? It's just Coke.
Yeah.
Fucking book, you're dead. That would be, you never know. You know, Neil Warnock, imagine turning him turning up in Paramount, Ross Papihami Gaze in there. That would be a sight to behold, I'm sure. But you know, we've mentioned Adel Trapp a few times, like thinking Duke maybe he'll end up and sort of they'll take a similar approach to Adel Trapp that they did Duke. You know, yeah, those step overs against Dundee, I think that Sam Gordon was referring to. Maybe Pape's the man. And I sure hope so, because it would be a right laugh, if nothing else.
Oh, it will be. And look, Warnock's at the wheel. It's going to be fun. It's going to be entertaining off the pitch. On the pitch, you know, as has been pointed out, is where we need it to be entertaining and the results come in. Do you want to play? Will I play the song that we've seen on social media?
You can if you want. I will, however, be turning down. I'll be muting my computer.
Well, I'll play the voice note that I sent you. This is dedicated to Don's _ 1983, who put the tweet out. I sent it to Callum last night, and I've amended the words slightly, but I know how much Phil and Callum enjoyed this earlier. I'm not even sorry for how bad my singing is either.
Warnock's at the wheel, so tell me how good does it feel? We've got Bojan and Clarkson in red, Jack McKenzie, he's Don's born and bred. We are the greatest in Scottish football, we've won it all.
Yes, come on boys, cannot wait to hear you singing that tomorrow at Ibrox, Callum. You'll be singing it loud and proud. You're not going?
No, I thought about it to see Warnock's first game, but no, I've considered I'm still unemployed, by the way. If anyone wants to hire me, I think I'd have better not.
So
get at me, please. No, I'm not going, but you never know. You know, you might hear it on the TV. Let's just hope it's a bit better than that. Don't give up the day job. That's all I'll say.
No, that's a shame. That could be the Christmas charity hit. See if we can get to Christmas number one.
I'm not even Warnock
involved. Get Warnock involved, I think.
Oh, if he's watching this, I'm sure he'd be well up for that a little bit. Right, let's get back to footballing matters, because we'll go to the game at the weekend where Aberdeen earned a 1-1 draw against Celtic in Peter Leaven taking interim charge. There were some changes to the squad, a little bit in change of shape. But Phil, I'll come to you first. Neil Warnock said today about, you know, you kind of need to ride your luck, and we need that at this moment in time. That first half especially, where Aberdeen became the first team this season to fail to have a touch in the opposition's box, we very much did ride our luck for long times in that first half.
Yeah, absolutely. Like I say, it was a different team second half, thank God. But... Yeah, some of the stuff in the first half, it was a little bit depressing. I mean, I was glad that we were actually keeping it structured and organised. Yeah, like you say, it would have been nice to have seen us on the front foot a bit more, which I'm hoping will be the case tomorrow. What I did like, and I'm hoping this sort of stays in Warnock's setup, is I feel like the players were just told to go and play. I feel like they sort of put the sort of your regiment into my structure and this is how you're going to play kind of mindset. And they were kind of allowed to express themselves a little bit more, you know, more so second half than first. But yeah, I'm hoping that's something that makes its resurgence tomorrow as well.
Yeah, the shackles certainly seem to be freed in the second half. In Callum, we got away with one in the first half with what seemed to take for fucking ever to check the most obvious offside we've seen this season. You know, well over 3 minutes, and that's not even accounting for the fact that the game had a 4-minute delay due to the fact that they couldn't get VAR to work in the first place. I did laugh at the tweet that I saw saying that the VAR was trying to work out if Considine was playing so they could judge when the Celtic penalty was coming. Sorry, save that one just for you. But again, going back to Warnock's comments about, you know, that he's not going to stand for players giving the ball away cheaply. once again, Kel Roos distribution in that first half, terrible. But the goal that was, you know, eventually ruled out by VAR was extremely sloppy play from Richard Jensen as well. So certainly from the first half alone, there's things that I'm sure Neil Warnock will have seen that will be looking to improve straight away.
Certainly. I mean, Graeme Shinney post-match, in his post-match interview, he also said that, you know, in the first half they thought they didn't look after the ball nearly well enough. And well, at least they're starting to see it anyway. Certainly was the case. Thankfully, things did improve massively. And you'd like to think that's the type of thing that Warnock will get out of them, you would hope, through one way or another. But it wasn't a great first half. But I was just thinking, if we can get in at half-time 0-0, we do have a chance. And that's how I always feel about these like games against Celtic and Rangers. If it's level at half-time and you've not conceded, then you've got half a chance. And thankfully, it was a totally different side that came out in that second half, it sort of seemed. But I missed sort of like the first 10 or so minutes of the game because I was moving stuff into the new flat after we had a bit of a debacle with half of it getting delivered the previous weekend. So I basically came upstairs and it was 1-0 Celtic. And I'm like, oh, God. Saw one replay of the offside goal. I was like, oh, that's fine then. That'll be disallowed. That's all I needed. How did it take them so long?
Well, I remember listening to Brendan Rodgers, and apparently they were checking for two or three handballs, he said, in the build-up. But I don't know where the handballs were coming from either. But, yeah, just absolutely farcical that it took that long. Phil, in the second half, you know, Peter Leaven coming out after the game and saying he just told the players to relax, just enjoy yourself, because he felt the players weren't really doing that in the first half. And what a difference. Big game Dante coming up with another excellent assist, and Bojan doing Bojan things by finishing off a chance once again. And I just unfortunately we couldn't hold on again, but signs there in that second half especially of the quality that this team possesses, but we've just not seen often enough this season.
Oh, absolutely. My hero, my mate Dante, in the second half I thought was ace. First half he was a bit sloppy, you know, gave the ball away cheaply at times and you know, wasn't throwing himself in challenges sort of as full-heartedly. But second half, I mean, he was getting used as a holding midfielder. He was getting used as a target man. He was getting used as a 10. He was like all over the place. So I don't know what was said to him at halftime, but I'm glad it was said. And like you say, I think the shackles did come off. We were creating chances, which is very rare for us against Celtic, to, you know, kind of actually be the creative force. I mean, there was a lot of the moves that were going on, even with Shinny, you know, good intricate play on the wing and whatnot. It's just one of those things where I think, when you are sitting in so much for a game and you're sort of relying on being solid defensively, you've got to be ruthless when the chances do come up. And, you know, as we saw, we just weren't quite clinical enough at times. Obviously, the Shinny miss chance being the most glaring one. What a difference the second half was.
And how much sleep do you think Graeme Shinny got on Saturday night, Callum? Because what an opportunity that was to really kind of hit home how good we've been playing in the second half. And part of me actually wondered, could he have almost left it for Bojan to finish instead? But he's got to be scoring that.
I think there's a chance in each of his last three games that he really should have done better with, which I suppose is encouraging, I guess, that he's getting in these sort of positions to a degree. But yeah, the finishing is far less than encouraged. I think in the interview again afterwards, he said it might be disallowed for a foul or something anyway. So he would have been sort of counting his lucky stars, I guess. But it was very, very poor. And, you know, that's three chances in the last three games. Maybe fourth time's a charm. Not the same, but we can but hope. It's been an odd season. Maybe that'll be the case tomorrow. And I'd love to see how fucking mental he would go. Scoring at Ibrox.
Yeah, again, of course, because he's done that before. Phil, since you were at the game, I want to speak to you about a couple of incidences and a couple of players at the played, because obviously they were kind of game-changing slightly as well. We'll go on the players first. In the last episode, we spoke about Conor Barron and the fact that, you know, him staying at the club rejecting a bid of $500,000 on transfer deadline day for Swansea. We spoke about potentially recouping that in a development fee in the summer. I think his performance at the weekend just emphasised why the decision to reject that bid was justified.
Oh, absolutely. He's superb. Like I said earlier on, when he's featured this season, he's been regularly one of the standouts on the pitch. I think when you look just now at, you know, Shinny's legs aren't quite what they used to be. You're needing somebody like Barron in there that can carry the brunt when energy levels aren't quite there. But as well, he's versatile enough to offer us, you know, he can play in the pivot with Shinny, he can play in the 10 if Clarkson's out. You know, he's all in all, I just thought probably, maybe other than Povara, but it's just me being biased and pushing my Povara agenda. You know, I would have maybe said Barham is man the match.
Yeah, well, I think that's fair. But another player that I was immensely impressed by and could arguably be up there as well for man of the match was loan signing Killian Phillips, who I thought was an absolute bundle of energy behind Bojan Miovski at the start. And I have to give a shout out to Leighton Clarkson as well, because I was quite critical of him after the game in midweek. But again, imagine playing players in their right position. I thought we know what him and Bojan can do in terms of their telepathic communication, as I've seen kind of quoted on social media. Once we took the kind of energy and impact of Killian Phillips off, Leighton Clarkson did his best to match that, and some of his passing was back to kind of what we saw last season. Obviously, that was his first start for Killian Phillips. What was your thoughts on his performance, Phil?
Yeah, I thought he played well. And like I said, I was kind of surprised at how much of a physical presence he was as well, which was quite nice. Because like I say, usually we're relying on Miovski to be that sort of physical outlet. But I mean, the amount of sort of long balls he either held up or flicked on for Bojan. And even, you know, some of the play with the ball at his feet, you know, he was quick and shifting it out. Which is, you know, something that we've really been missing at the top end of the pitch, you know, where we're usually quite slow. So, you know, I think if he's sort of played in that sort of 10 or just off the right, you know, I think he could be quite important for us going into the rest of the season.
Yeah, definitely. And Callum, obviously, having the option of Phillips or Clarkson, if we're going with Bojan up top, gives us that kind of extra edge, because Phillips currently is a bit of an unknown quantity to a lot of Scottish defences.
Yeah, he certainly is. It's quite a nice problem, I'm sure, for Neil Warnock to have. I mean, I suppose with Phillips as well, he was pretty close to scoring with that sort of long-range attempt he tried to catch Joe Hart out, which I quite liked the fact he even tried it, to be fair. But then you contrast that with Leighton Clarkson's ball for the disallowed Miovski goal was just absolutely gorgeous, and it's something that we've certainly not seen enough of. We've been rather critical on here, I think, but I'm sure we're probably not the only ones. It looked about his best. What really impressed me as well was when he came on, the energy and the press as well. When he, like, a lot of the time in the first half, I felt, you know, Bojan was trying to press, and then he, in fact, one time I remember he turned around and he was just like, why am I even bothering when nobody else from the midfield is covering support? But Clarkson was getting up next to him massively to press in the second half, which was encouraging. And we've mentioned every other midfielder that played. Personally, my man of the match, maybe outside Jack McKenzie and Bojan Miovski obviously as well, Jay McGrath, I thought a lot of his defensive work was very, very good. Perhaps maybe not all of it came off going forward for him, but a lot of his defensive effort was incredible for me. And it's just quite nice that they're all sort of on form. Well, it's one game, but on form, I guess, by our standards.
Yeah, I'm just still annoyed that Graham Shinney couldn't commit a third foul to win my money. 4-1 for him to commit three fouls seemed a great price. But good point on Jack McKenzie, a player that does seem to be very much underrated by lots of the Aberdeen support. I'll include myself in that. And he is a player that seems to be going from strength to strength this season. Also, you mentioned there, Callum, the Miovski disallowed goal. they were very quick to decide that that was offside. It didn't take them anywhere near as long as it did for the Louis Palma goal. The other big talking point, I guess, from the second half, Callum, I'll come to you. Obviously, you were watching on TV. Paul Donaldson pointing out, shocking tackle by Navroki. Should have been a second yellow, but Miovski got booked for dissent instead. Bizarre refereeing. Phil, I'm sure you'll back me up on this as someone in the ground. Every man and their dog could see that that was a foul and a booking, apart from Steve McLean, Kel Sapree.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree with you. I'm every man and his dog in the ground. certainly second yellow card. I've seen a lot of Celtic fans saying, yeah, but the first one was never a booking, which I can kind of see their point a little bit. It was, I guess it was soft. However, ultimately, Steve McLean gave that yellow card and he should have given another one. If he's going to get booked for either of them, it should have been the second one, certainly. Bojan Miovski was not happy. The fact he got a yellow card for complaining was a joke as well and sort of compounded things. But referees bottling big decisions when you're playing against Celtic or Rangers. Who's surprised? And I'm sure it won't be the last of it we see in recent times. No, it's the future. It's not recent times.
Well, I was just saying the next 24 hours, given our game tomorrow as well.
I'm rough. I apologise.
And we know fine well that had that been at Parkhead and Graham Shinney going flying in, it would have almost certainly been a second booking. Celtic do get their equaliser, their new signing, whose last name is a bit dodgy to say on a podcast, grabs the equaliser. Matt O'Reilly goes on to hit the post, adding to the crossbar that they hit in the first half as well. We rode our luck, absolutely. But I think, Phil, for me, certainly leaving Pittodrie, I felt a point was more than fair for us.
Yeah, well, I mean, I was watching it on Sky Sports on my phone because I booked the wrong train. because I had kickoff in my head as 12 and I booked a train too early. So I had to leave with about 10 minutes to go to sprint over to Union Square. So I was watching it on my phone and did see the last 10 minutes. But rode our luck a bit, but I thought we were good in the sense we limited them to not creating too much clear-cut opportunities. Mm. You know, in how many times at Parkhead and at Pittodrie have we sort of basically just seen Celtic do the same run down the wing, cut it down the byline, and nobody's marking anybody in the box? I thought we were quite good at limiting that. Obviously, when the new striker boy is Ida, whatever he's called, boy from Norwich, I think when he came on, he offered them more of an out ball, which I think helped them get on the front foot a bit more. But I thought for the most part, I thought our structure and organisation and sort of nullifying that was good. It was a real positive step.
Yeah, and I was on the Cynic podcast, which is a Celtic fan podcast, and they were trying to tell me that Bojan was the second best striker in the league behind Kyogo, but Kyogo was fucking terrible at the weekend. Hardly did anything. And it's on to Ibrox tomorrow night, Callum. Me and Phil and Johnny on the last episode were discussing, as much as we hate the term, the game against Celtic as being a free hit. Obviously, the point of the weekend gives us confidence, gives us something to build on. But is tomorrow night, given, you know, the kind of the build-up, I guess, to the game with Neil Warnock coming in and wanting to have his own look, is this another game where we've got absolutely nothing to lose in?
I don't think we do have much to lose. Of course, it would still be sore to suffer a defeat at Ibrox, certainly. It's a heavy one. But, I mean, it's really hard. It's hard to judge. It's hard to take anything from the game when you consider Warnock's been in the door less than 24 hours at this stage. I wouldn't read too much into it. I would perhaps expect a lot of application from the Aberdeen players, knowing what they've got to come and have had a little bit of a taster. And that's the type of thing you'd want anyway of Aberdeen going to Ibrox. And look, we've already had success down there. Why not make it happen again? 800 wins for Neil Warnock at Ibrox? I'd be delighted.
Yeah, and Phil, it's a really good point that Carl makes. You know, having one down there already this season, why can't we go and do it again? And I echo those sentiments from Callum as well about players looking to impress Neil Warnock. Obviously, the fear is that heavy defeat, and a heavy defeat would send Rangers to the top of the table for 24 hours at least. So, you know, they themselves have an incentive going into this game. How do you think, though, we approach this game? You know, I mentioned about Neil Warnock's, you know, typical style being a team set up defensively, difficult to break down. Do we, I don't want to say park the bus, but do we go very defensively minded into the game tomorrow night?
No, I don't think we do. I think we set up very similarly to how we set up against Celtic. I think we set up to, you know, be solid when we're out of possession, but still be able to create going forward when we can. And I think that's the way they've kind of got to look at it. You know, you're not looking to go all guns blazing and punt everybody forward because, you know, as much as I hate to admit it, Rangers have a very quick, you know, front line that would punish that. So I think, you know, if you're sort of setting out at the baseline of a draw and seeing what happens from there, try to pick up a point, I think that'd be a sensible way to go about it. You know, not only are players playing for position, I think they should look at, you know, the aftermath of the Celtic game. You know, I think that was the first time I'd seen an Aberdeen team applauded off the pitch and quite everybody was happy with how the game had ended for the first time in a while. I think we've got to look at that and go, you know, we want this every week and they will get it every week as long as they put in the same level of performance and the same level of sort of fight and determination. So, yeah, I think it'll be an interesting one, but I think they should sort of, you know, not just park it.
And Callum, I'm sure we speak for the majority of Aberdeen fans when we're in the sense for tomorrow that we hope we see more application from this team than we did the last time the two teams met in the cup final, because I think, again, going back to the previous episode where I made the point where I'd rather see an Aberdeen team go down trying. I felt for parts of the game on Saturday, if Celtic were going to, you know, sneak a winner, I couldn't be too disappointed because I wasn't going to walk away from Pittodrie thinking we hadn't had a go at them in that second period. I want to see us having a go at Rangers, albeit doing it at the right time. Don't just, you know, employ what we did when Jim Goodwin was a manager. You take a 1-0 lead and still get absolutely battered in that game. You've got to be sensible and measured in your approach, but I certainly want to see more effort and application than, as I said, the last time out the two sides met.
Certainly, we do need to be sensible and measured, but we do have players that can hurt. I mean, if you provide Miovski with a chance, there's a pretty decent percentage, you'd imagine, of a chance that he's going to stick it away. And we need to provide a player like of that quality with chances to stand a chance going to Ibrox. We know it'll be a lot against us, stacked against us, not in our favour. But Warnock wants them to die for him, and I'm sure if they do you know, that level of application, then fans will be happy regardless. That's what we want. We want everyone pulling in the right direction, something to get behind, and that's the least you can really ask for. Yeah, we've not had it. It's not felt like that for a while. If they go down to Ibrox and put in a performance like that, and as Warnock says, you've got to fucking die to get 3 points. So.
Yeah, and I suppose with Don Robertson being the match official tomorrow, of course he was the match official for the cup final as well. If we've got to get anything from Ibrox, we've got to put in a performance, but we've got to be, to quote Neil Warnock, fucking disciplined as well, because we can't afford to kind of have that ill discipline. And the comment on screen from Pedros73, you know, mentioning a point tomorrow night would be great, three would be better, but, you know, I think this is a bit tinfoil hat on here from Pedros. The officials will do their best to protect Rangers. They will hate the press we have received today. But look, if it's an anti-Aberdeen agenda that people are trying to create, that just spurs the likes of us on more to keep that sort of thing going.
I mean, Certainly, I mean, you know, we'll be in Glasgow. That's the fucking difference. I'm just seeing how many more quotes I can get out now. The tinfoil hat movie is out a little bit, but I'm guilty of such a thing as well. But at the same time, you know, how many times have we had any sort of favourable decision in Glasgow? So, you know, I'm not expecting much. We're going to have to be at our fucking best to get something. I've got no doubt. My dad was like, oh, Tavernier's not had a penalty in a wee while. So, I mean, it extends
to the
old man as well. And maybe he's now jinxed it, which it would be a damn shame. But would you be surprised? No,
but I know who I'm going to blame.
Well, I mean, no, but the point is, maybe they're saving it up. Maybe they're waiting. Maybe they're waiting for the big one.
Phil, kind of final point on the game. Warnock made the point that if we win tomorrow, it's his influence. If we don't, it's Peter Leaven that's done a lot of the coaching. How important do you think the fact that Peter Leaven remains as a first team coach will be between now and the end of the season? Obviously, a guy that's coached these players for a period of time and can obviously see what the squad's capable of, because he fair got a tune out of him at the weekend.
Yeah, no, definitely. It's, you know, we can all sort of fantasize and say Warnock's been watching us on Red TV for the entire season and knows the squad inside out. He's not. So I think having some sort of continuity and, you know, just someone that if you feel necessary or, you know, just in general to go to and say, look, what do you think? Or, you know, who do you think performs best in this situation? Who's the leaders? Who's the sort of bomb scares? Having someone like that around will, I suppose, make it less of a rash transition of Warnock kind of experimenting, I would like to think. So you know, like, nobody was asking for him to be given a 10-year deal after the Celtic game. But I think after the Celtic game, it would have been harsh to just see him winged out of the coaching staff completely. I'm glad you're on. And plus, he spoke well after the presser. After the game and his post-match media stuff, he just seems like a genuinely nice guy. So I'm quite happy he's still kicking about.
Yeah, and Willie Miller was definitely keen to give Leaving the job on a permanent basis based on that point. But I'm glad that we've not quite been hypnotised by an interim just yet. But I know how easily me and Callum can get carried away. So I win tomorrow night. I'm progressing in the Scottish Cup. I'm sure me and Callum will quickly be singing from the top of the hills about Neil Warnock and what that means for his future at Aberdeen. But look, I'm not going to get too carried away. I think that the way that the club have gone about this is sensible in terms of appointing an experienced manager that can look to get the best out of this squad between now and the end of the season. But as has been mentioned by a lot of you in the comments tonight, it's the results that need to start coming, and that does start tomorrow. So let's hope that we do see continued positive signs in terms of performance and results. But thank you both, Callum, for reappearing on the podcast.
Thanks for joining us, Callum.
What the hell? It's been a stressful time. My computer's not been on for about 2 weeks. It was pooing the bed. Leave me alone.
Yeah, nice of you to take a little sabbatical and join the crew once again. And thanks to all of you that have been tuning in. We went over 200 of you watching at one point tonight, so really big numbers and a lot of you getting involved in the comments. As always, if you have been watching, do hit that like button before leaving the video tonight, or hit it when you're catching up. Hit subscribe as well. Remember, it's free to do so here on YouTube and audio as well. We've seen a real surge in numbers on YouTube as well, so really good to see a lot of you continuing to enjoy the content and supporting the podcast as well. Stay tuned to our social media channels on Twitter at @RTG_podcast. Instagram is RTG.podcast because we're going to have a wee raffle for Player of the Year coming up on that as well. But yes, thank you, Phil. Thank you, Callum. And thanks for everyone for watching. Enjoy the rest of the week. But remember, do so by being fucking disciplined. Sports Social Podcast Network.